This is 89.9 WWNL. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for an evening of children's theater, which tackles life issues, new gallery exhibits in the St. Claude Arts District, or a virtual tour of a long-gone architectural marvel, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. The Anthony Bean Community Theater Summer Performing Arts Camp presents Me, based on the Broadway musical, The Me Nobody Knows, giving voice to the feelings of inner-city youth. Joining me is Camp Director Elise Felix with Youth Director, Actor Tyler Felix. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having us.
Tell me, what was the attraction to this 1970s musical by Friedman and Holt?
We wanted to have the kids tell a story, to speak out and be their voice, because with everything that's happening in the world today, we feel like kids are really taking out the forefront of speaking and making their voices heard.
I understand that there is no plot, but the themes are numerous, and those touch the lives of young people attending the arts camp?
Yes. We have a lot of young kids that's going through problems, and we get a mixture of kids and children from all walks, all aspects of life throughout the community. We don't just have Orleans Parish kids. We have Jefferson Parish. We have kids from Houston, Texas, Atlanta. They come in for the summer, and they always want to come back to Anthony Bean Theater. They want to come back and do the production there. And over the past 3 or 4 years, some of the problems and some of the encounters that we've dealt with some of the youth, some of the kids that's coming in there, we thought that this year we should put something on where they could express themselves a little bit more. And some of the monologues that you'll hear, some of the problems that was talked about in the original production, you see are still a problem, and it's on the forefront of today, and it's happening in children's lives right here. So we gave them a platform. The opening of the play, it's a street scene where the kids are playing. There's nursery rhymes, hotscotch, and basketball, and they're running, they're playing tag and everything, and all of a sudden, boom, 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 gunshots ring out. Everybody hit the playground. Two kids are standing, and then they go into a monologue. It's called This Is America. This is what they're dealing with right now, right here. And they start to speak about that was their friend, and now he's no longer there with them. Repeatedly, they go back and say, this is America. This is what we're dealing with. But then they start talking about, did anybody think about his brother, his cousin, his uncle, his godmother, his auntie, his grandfather, his mother, his father? They go down a list and they just name all the relatives in this kid's life, all the dreams and aspirations that this kid will never get to see, all because somebody decided to shoot up a playground. And the ones that are doing this monologue, they're only 8.
Wow.
If they haven't experienced it or gone through it, they know someone that has experienced it or gone through it.
Now, this work was written back in the 1970s, and a lot of things still exist, but it seems to me that you've made it even more modern with an opening scene like that.
Yes, we have tweaked it a little bit and put a little, you know, more modern, some more update songs. We kept some of those, but a lot of the songs have changed and kind of made it more relative and more relatable to the kids and the children that are actually going to be performing them and doing them. And it's a lot of social problems that's going on with them. The production, the play, it touches on a lot of that. And believe it or not, these kids, as young as they are, they're able to bring it to life.
And we're talking kids from what ages?
Kids from age 7 to 17. A lot of the work is done behind the scenes, and these young people are actually a part of that. They're a part of set design, costumes, stage building. They're part of the plot and character breakdown. If they don't understand what's going on with the characters, a group of them will get together and they'll research that character. So they're in all aspects of this.
Now, Tyler, you are not only the youth director, but you are also one of the actors in The Me Nobody Knows.
Yes.
Can you share something from the performance?
Sure. I can actually play a song for you from the show about a kid who's homeless today. I was down in a dump shack, broke with my shades on, holes in my jean, unclean to a payphone. I didn't think I could fall so low when I was almost at the top. Yeah, no shoes, no car, nowhere to lay my head. The concrete on the street is what I call my bed. I didn't think I could fall so low when I was almost at the top. So I looked inside, worked hard to keep my dreams alive. I gotta get it together, my life together, if I wanna get back on top. So I close my eyes, pray to heaven, and I realize I gotta get it together, my life together, if I wanna get back on top. Whoa.
Why did you choose that particular number?
I chose that number because I see different homeless people, and I see them with children sometimes, and I think to myself, a lot of times those people are invisible. We consciously make the choice to make those people invisible, but it is so amazing and beautiful to see these kids actually bring this to life and have an outlet to put this on stage and make people feel something.
The title, The Me Nobody Knows, begs the question, what is it that audiences will know after this experience?
They'll know the children individually. And they're actually letting people know, this is me. This is who I am. Look at me. They actually come alive and they build a family. These kids are awesome.
Camp director Elise Felix and youth director and actor Tyler Felix, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
The Anthony Bean Community Theater Summer Performing Arts Camp presents Me, an adaptation of the Broadway musical, The Me Nobody Knows. Performances run July 27th through 29th and August 3rd and 4th in the Millie Charles Auditorium at Southern University at New Orleans, 6800 Press Drive. More info is online at anthonybeantheater.com. Two exhibits on view at the artist-run Front Gallery in the St. Claude Arts District might tweak your think on a variety of issues. One is a solo exhibit of new works by WWNO's Cynthia Scott called Convoluted. The other is a group show entitled Piecework, curated by Scott. My colleague Cynthia Scott is here. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Diane.
You have been in a very creative period. What are you asking of viewers in your latest works?
I want them to enjoy, number one. I want them to think as well.
And what was the inspiration for Convoluted?
Convoluted is an expression of the situation that we are all in right now on every single issue. Every issue that we are facing, especially the contentious ones, are very tangled in the background and the problems and the possible solutions to the problems. You could start to try to unpin a problem, unpick it, and say, well, okay, children should not be coming across the border. You know, immigrant children should not be coming across the border by themselves. It's dangerous. But on the other hand, they are in danger of being sucked into gangs where they live in South America, and that's dangerous. So what do we do? You know, it's a standoff. It's a convoluted situation. And what I believe is that although politically we seem to be poles apart, lining up on opposite sides of a chasm, I think if we look at the convolution and the tangle, I think we're going to find that we overlap in many areas. And so this was my expression of the concept of convolution visually. I took it into many different mediums. I like to say that I make solo shows that look like group shows organized around a theme, because you'll walk in and there are three-dimensional collages, there's resin sculpture, there are two installations, there's photography. So, you know, this must have been done by a bunch of different people, but it was all done by me.
All done by you.
So it's the visual expression of convolution. But each piece actually tackles one of the issues that we're facing.
So life's complicated.
Yes.
Take us through the exhibit. What will we see?
You'll first see two three-dimensional collages dealing with our financial system. We're stuck in that place where it's not really working for everyone. It's working very poorly, and it's precipitous at some times and about to collapse. But if we try to undo it and do it over again, that's disastrous as well. there's another piece that deals with just the nature of disagreement. There's one side firmly convinced of their rightness and the other side firmly convinced of their rightness. And in a visual way, I'm making a reconciliation between those two sides. It's a triptych. It's a three-part piece. I have photographs of convoluted elements that I've taken around the city, and each one deals with a different topic: global warming, how we're treating our built environment, which is making flooding worse in our city.
And there's more, a second room in the gallery. There's a group show that you have curated called Piecework. Here I'm reminded of patchwork quilts.
That was my inspiration. It's the concept of taking things that have perhaps outworn their usefulness and cutting them into smaller pieces and putting them together and making something new, something beautiful, something functional, something aesthetically pleasing. However, none of the works in the show are quilts. Maria Levitsky is a photographer. In these two pieces, she has cut them into very small fragments and taped them together in the most beautiful way. They make a mosaic-like form. We have Marianne Desmarais, who has two pieces in the show, one of which is three-dimensional cut wood pieces in geometric shapes, largely triangles, that have been affixed to cloth and then attached to the wall in such a way as it's actually, it becomes a three-dimensional wall relief. We have Abdi Farah. He was the winner of one of those television creative competition shows, The Work of Art, The Next Great Artist. He was the winner of season one. He has two beautiful, largely fabric pieces, but he has also drawn and painted on these pieces and added some three-dimensional elements to them. That's the closest you would get to an actual fabric quilt, but they're not quilts. Sadie Shelton, she used to work in a pizza place, and she took the large tomato sauce cans and broke them apart, flattened them, punched holes in them, and stitched them together with wire. It looks like a painting. Anita Cook is a well-known artist in town, and she uses fragments of canvas, which she cuts and paints and stitches in various ways, very ornate, intricately made works.
You also have a film festival going on in the gallery.
A nationally competitive film festival. It's our fourth annual film festival. We have a beautiful video installation by Libby Ponce from Tampa. It's sort of a three-dimensional moving canvas. There are clear plastic curtains hung around it, and you're welcome to go inside. And she has a deep theme. She deals with ideas of the other. She's from a Latino heritage, and she's dealing with elements of inclusion and exclusion. We also have another video installation by Dan Rule, who's a local artist who teaches at UNO. It's quite charming. There's a fish tank with live fish, and he has a video behind the fish tank, which is a flowing mountain stream. It's a collage video. It looks as if the stream is pouring into the fish tank, and then the fish are swimming around beneath it. He has a very droll sense of humor, which he employs in his work, and I always appreciate seeing what he puts together. And then some really, really fantastic videos to just sit and watch.
What will be the big takeaway for viewers?
There's a lot of wonderful contemporary art happening in New Orleans. It's very accessible. Just walk around and enjoy yourselves.
Artist Cynthia Scott, thanks so much.
Thank you, Diane.
The exhibits Convoluted and Piecework, along with the film festival, are on view at the Front Gallery, 4100 St. Claude Avenue, weekends through August 5th. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. A demolished architectural marvel is coming back to life, virtually, that is. The Preservation Resource Center is doing a virtual reality tour this week of the Rivergate Exhibition Hall, giving architecture fans an actual sense of stepping inside the massive structure which once stood where Harrah's Casino is today. The PRC's new executive director, Danielle Del Sol, is here with the details. Welcome.
Hi, Diane. Thanks for having me.
This sounds like such a cool project. How did the idea come about?
The idea came about through planning for our Mid-Mod NOLA series. We love mid-century modern architecture at the PRC. We think it's fabulous and it's deserving of attention. But when people think New Orleans, they don't think mid-mod. We launched a series last summer to celebrate mid-century modern architecture, and hundreds upon hundreds of people came out to each event, and it blew us away, and we were so excited. And so we had to do it again. We've had the series this year. We had over 600 people come to Lake Vista to do a house tour in Lake Vista. And one thing we thought when planning this year's series was you know, there are many modernist structures in New Orleans that have been lost through the years, and many were post-Katrina. Rivergate was earlier than that. It was demolished in the mid-1990s. But besides just showing people a picture, how can we help them understand the significance of those structures, perhaps even experience them? And so one of our partners in this series is the New Orleans Architecture Foundation, and their executive director, Joel Palmaville, has a group of friends who are architects who do 3D modeling for their clients as they design buildings. So he went to them and they decided it would be great if they could do this for a building that was not around when this technology was introduced. And so they decided on the Rivergate, and the Southeastern Architectural Archives at Tulane provided the plans, and they used those to build the model.
And what exactly are you doing? What is the experience?
You're going to come to the Preservation Resource Center, and you are going to put on some goggles. You are going to use your smartphone's camera to scan a code. Your phone slides into the goggles. You're looking at your phone, but through a lens that makes it 3D, and you are going to see one of five vantage points at the Rivergate. You're going to be able to look up, down, all around, and feel like you are either in the entryway of the building, the mezzanine, the Great Exposition Hall, or the conference room. Or the fifth option is a bird's eye view. So they're going to do a flyover of the Rivergate so that you can see the building in its entirety from above. The really talented people who actually put the virtual reality tour together, did all the coding to do that, they will be there and they will be talking about the process. So it's going to be a great night.
Wow. Now, if you would, take us back in time. Tell us a little about the Rivergate's history. Describe the structure.
Sure. The Rivergate was an incredibly cutting-edge modernist piece of architecture when it was designed, and it was built in 1968. And the way that I've heard it described is like the crest of a wave. It was a very organic but modern building and really renowned for its beauty. It was designed by Curtis and Davis, which of course was the preeminent modernist architecture firm here in New Orleans, and they worked internationally and to great acclaim, and there's still many significant structures, including the Superdome and others, standing today by Curtis and Davis. What was so fascinating about this building at the time was the technology used to put it together. So it had a great cantilevered roof, and that's the part that looked like the giant wave that was cresting. And because it was cantilevered, it didn't need beams to hold it up, so you could be underneath the wave without obstruction. And from what I understand, the interior was designed in that same way. In the exposition hall, you could have so much open space without columns impeding a view or the vista of the interior of the building.
Why is a project like this one now close to your heart?
Our historic built environment matters. These are places that host our culture, that host our events, our life events. We have memories there. We have attachments there. And when something is demolished, it's gone forever. If it's beloved, as this building was, it's a true loss that people, even years later, still regretfully think about. Each piece of New Orleans architecture is part of who we are. If the city is a person, it's a limb, it's a fingernail, it's a piece of hair, you know, it's a part of a whole. And every time a piece is lost, a little bit of us goes. And while we can bring it back in virtual reality, we can't bring it back in reality. So the best we can do is explore it in this way now and appreciate it for what it was.
Now, Danielle, you have been at the helm of the PRC since February. Congratulations.
Thank you.
But you have been working behind the scenes for a while. Tell us about your journey and how you were smitten by the city of New Orleans.
Yeah. I arrived in New Orleans at the very beginning of 2010 to study historic preservation at the Tulane School of Architecture. And I had searched all around the country for somewhere to study historic preservation. And when I found out that Tulane had a preservation program in New Orleans, it was just like coming to Mecca to study the great art. And it was a wonderful program. I studied under Eugene Sizek, who was the founder of that program and helped save the Marigny. Part of my education and the education of everyone in that program is to really get on the ground and learn in the neighborhoods, in individuals' homes, how people work on the grassroots level to save the places that they care about. So that has just been endlessly inspiring to me. I really feel that preservation is a community tool to help us dictate where the places we live in look like, from our home to our neighborhood to our city. And I was lucky enough to intern at the Preservation Resource Center while a graduate student at Tulane with Mary Fitzpatrick, who is the longtime editor of Preservation in Print. And it was just serendipity that just as I finished my degree, the deputy editor position at Preservation of Print came available. And she asked me, would I like the job? And I said, you bet I would. I worked with Mary for 3 years, and sadly, she passed away suddenly at the end of 2013. Oh. And it was very tragic. She was very much a mentor to me. Yeah. But I was very honored to fill in her shoes and take over as editor of Preservation and Print. And I did that for 4 years before becoming director.
Wow. And you are only the fourth executive director in what, 40 years?
44 years.
44 years.
Yes.
Wow.
There have been many more presidents than there have been directors at the Preservation Resource Center.
You came to New Orleans from Florida?
Not directly. I'm originally from Miami, Florida. I'm part Cuban and have roots down there. All of our extended family is down there. My father's in sales, and so I lived in several places growing up. We moved to Arkansas when I was 13, spent some time in Northwest Arkansas, and I went to college in Central Arkansas and lived in Little Rock after college. And that's where I really discovered historic preservation. So preservation spoke to me on many different levels. That's kind of what led me to New Orleans.
And you've got big shoes to fill.
Indeed.
What are your plans moving forward for preserving New Orleans architectural treasures?
Well, Patty Gay left an incredible legacy of 37 years as our former director, and I was so honored to have worked with her for so many years. So being chosen as the new director, I definitely feel like I'm bringing forward her legacy and hopefully her passion for this incredible historic city. The PRC is going to do what we do best, and that is advocate to save the historic built environment as much as we can and educate people on why it's important. The intangible effect of how you feel when you're walking down a streetscape that just feels like New Orleans, you can't really put a price tag on it unless you say, well, 18 million tourists came to New Orleans and a big part of the reason they came was because it just feels like New Orleans. We want to keep it feeling like New Orleans so that people keep coming here, our industry keeps growing, people have jobs. It's all connected.
Yes, it is. Preservation Resource Center Executive Director Danielle Del Sol, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you so much.
You can experience the Rivergate in virtual reality Thursday evening, July 26th, at the Preservation Resource Center, 923 Chapatula Street, beginning at 6. More info at prcno.org. That's our show for this week. Support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation and from Christwood Retirement Center in Covington. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.